It is a great pleasure to welcome to Best Ideas 2021, Yaron Neymark, founder and portfolio manager of One Main Capital, a boutique investment firm founded in 2018 that seeks to make concentrated investments in high quality, reasonably valued businesses with long reinvestment runways, and special situations undergoing an element of change or temporary dislocation that will cause investors to revalue an investment in the near term. Prior to founding One Main Capital, Yaron spent 10 years analyzing businesses professionally, including at multi-billion dollar value-oriented public and private equity firms. Yaron is a South Florida native, a lover of the outdoors, and currently lives in New York City. Yaron, I hope that's still all accurate, and it's a great pleasure to have you with us again here at MOI Global. I truly enjoyed your presentation in the past, and I look forward to this one as well. Please go ahead.
Thanks for having me, and hello to everyone, as well as to you, John. Appreciate you having me back to present at the Manual of Ideas Best Ideas Conference this year. The last time I presented at one of your conferences was in mid-2019 at the Wide Moat Conference, where I pitched KKR. And since the day I pitched KKR through today, KKR is up about 65% or an annualized 38%, which I feel pretty good about. KKR is still one of the top positions in my fund. It's still a double-digit percent of One Main Capital's assets, so I still feel really good about it. But I'm even more excited to discuss a new idea with you guys today, and so let's get to it. Before we do get to it, I'll start off with a quick slide on my background and on myself. I started One Main Capital in early 2018, as you mentioned a second ago, after spending over a decade investing, including a fair amount of time in both private equity and hedge funds. One Main is a long bias partnership. We focus on making concentrated investments in high quality, attractively valued and growing businesses. What makes a good investment? In terms of my investment philosophy, I like to keep things simple. I think it's very tough for investors to predict changes in multiples that market participants ascribe to businesses. That's not to say great investors don't have a strong sense of what a fair multiple range is for certain types of businesses, depending on, you know, size, quality, growth profile, management quality, and things like that. But predicting changes in the actual multiple ascribed to a very specific business is just a very hard thing to do. And so the main and only way, in my view, to sustainably get paid in equity investing are really, I think of it as there's two ways. One, you either have to get a high and what you believe to be sustainable current cash yield relative to your purchase price. So if you can get a high dividend yield or a high coupon relative to your investment and you believe it's sustainable, you can get a good return. Or you have to have high growth in earnings per share or free cash flow per share, whichever metric is more relevant, and that will drive the intrinsic value of the business higher. Today I plan to focus on a business that I believe can compound its earnings per share and free cash flow per share at a very attractive rate for a very long period of time. And even better, not only are you able to ride along with this business as it compounds at a very attractive rate for a very long period of time, it trades at a low multiple of free cash flow, which gives us optionality that the multiple eventually re-rates higher. And so if I'm right on the business, then even with a constant multiple, the stock should compound at the rate of free cash flow, which would be a home run. And if the market wakes up to the business quality and rewards us with a higher multiple at some point in the future, which I do think will happen, then it goes from being a home run to being a grand slam. And so, as you can see on this slide, I screened here for the top 10 performing companies in the US and Canada over the last 5 years. And the screen criteria was simple. It was companies with a market cap of greater than $100 million and that were profitable at the start of the five-year period. And as you can see in the slide, the ones that generated the best total shareholder return were the ones that grew earnings per share at attractive rates over time. So for today's presentation, I'm going to pitch what I believe to be a cash compounding machine. I touched on this a bit earlier, but this cash compounding machine sells for a very low valuation. Specifically, it sells for about 9 times its maintenance free cash flow. And it has compounded free cash flow per share at 23% since 2015. But I fully expect that this growth rate will accelerate in the coming years. So this business is RCI Hospitality. The ticker is RICK, RIC. And RIC is an incredibly well-run small cap company. It has a strong management team. It has high insider ownership. It has high barriers to entry. It has an ability to redeploy its free cash flow at attractive rates of return. And it operates primarily in two segments. One is nightclubs, which are basically gentlemen's clubs. And the other is Bombshells, which is a military-themed sports bar. I'll touch on each of these segments in a bit, but first I'll try to tell you a story of how RCI went from a good business to a great stock. The company was essentially built by its current CEO, Eric Langan, and he took over in the 90s. And Eric didn't go to Harvard Business School. You know, he studied at the School of Hard Knocks, as they call it. He's made mistakes along the way, but the important thing is he's always learned from those mistakes. He admits when he makes them, he can explain why or how something went wrong. And then he explains to you what he learned and why he won't repeat them. And importantly, he also listens to shareholders' perspective. So if shareholders see that he's going away they don't like, he's very open-minded to having those types of conversations. And so it was around 2015 when a large shareholder came to Eric and suggested that they thought he should and could improve his capital allocation at the company. And Eric listened to them. Previously, he was looking for revenue growth. He thought that's what public market investors wanted to see. And this large shareholder came to Eric and to the board and gave them a presentation. And I'll never forget when Eric told me this. I think it was a great moment when I finally realized how receptive he is to great ideas. But this large shareholder came to the board and came to Eric, and they gave the presentation with the title, "Just Do Nothing." That was the front page of the presentation. And the theme of the presentation was that, look, you have a diversified business of a bunch of locations that are very stable and cash generative. And the business currently sells at a low valuation, and you're trying too hard, you're doing too much, just do nothing. And Eric engaged with them. He wanted to hear where they were coming from. And he also read a book that I'm sure many people listening today have heard of called The Outsiders. And he's taken the lessons from that book and from those shareholders to heart. And so since 2015, he's been solely focused on growing free cash flow per share of RCI. He's no longer focused on growing revenue for the sake of growing revenue. But he is focused on growing free cash flow per share without taking a lot of risk. And I'd encourage everyone who listens to this presentation today to also listen to earnings calls and flip through investor presentations. And you'll quickly realize that while Eric is the CEO of a $400 million company, he sounds more sophisticated than the management teams of many multi-billion dollar companies that I follow. And I'm sure many people here will agree. He basically deploys cash into projects when those projects generate strong returns. He buys back stock when the stock trades at a double-digit free cash flow yield or higher. And other than that, he actually does nothing now. He's patient, but fortunately, he doesn't need to be that patient because there's a lot of great stuff for him to do. And so, as you can see from this chart, the stock did very well after the company communicated and began implementing its new capital allocation strategy. In mid-2018, the company started getting attacked by an anonymous short seller. These attacks led to not only an SEC investigation, but also led to the board hiring a international law firm to conduct an internal investigation. So you had two investigations, one internal and one by the SEC. They were both closed out. The latter of which was the SEC investigation, which was closed out in September of 2020. And in total, what the investigation found was that the company was giving perks to its management team and wasn't appropriately disclosing them. So in total, over a six-year period, there was about $1 million worth of perks, or actually less than $1 million of perks in total over 6 years that were properly expensed, but not adequately disclosed in the 10-Ks. And so those became disclosed and the company was able to put that behind it, which was a big positive. A few other positive things happened in 2020. The first is that the company signed its first franchise agreement with potential franchisee. And that could really help accelerate the growth profile of Bombshells. And the second was the company was able to generate positive free cash flow and kind of prove out how resilient its business model is during COVID at a time when many restaurants and bars were burning cash and were in distress. So this slide kind of talks about the club segment of the business. The clubs are very good businesses. The licenses needed to operate these establishments they're grandfathered in, and new ones are rarely granted to any new competitors who want to pop up. So unlike typical bars and nightclubs, there's really not a new guard that pops up every 2 years and becomes the new cool place to go. These are old, well-known establishments, and they're very stable. So while they don't really have exciting organic or same-store sales growth, they do have very stable cash flows, and those cash flows could be used to reinvest in new opportunities, which I'll touch on in a little bit. But the stability of these can't be understated. I mean, in a recession, comps usually go negative for like one or two quarters, and then they snap back. You know, people like to go out, being social. It's an important part of people's lives. And so, yeah, it's a good business. Eric is able to take the cash generated by the clubs and reinvest them into M&A on the club side, as well as new Bombshells locations on the Bombshell side. On the club M&A front, RCI is able to buy competing clubs for 3 to 4 times EBITDA. RCI is typically the buyer of choice when it comes to buying these. And typically they're only competing with the management of the club that's being sold, where the management is trying to buy the club from the owner who's looking to retire. But the management of the existing club obviously don't have enough cash. So they ask to pay over time. And clearly RCI is a more creditworthy buyer than those types of buyers. So really there's very limited competition. They're able to buy these at 3 to 4 times EBITDA. There's a ton of these out there, but RCI is very selective in the types of clubs they want to buy. They're really only looking for premium clubs in cities that have strong employment and population trends, and where there aren't new licenses easily granted to competitors. And they've earmarked about 500 of these across the country that they would be interested in buying, which is a very long runway, 500 compared to their current footprint of about 36. So there's a very long runway for them to continue doing acquisitions in this segment. They also like to own the underlying real estate in this segment. They consider it to be very strategic since the licenses are tied to the locations, and they don't want to be, you know, held up by the landlord over our lease renewal because they can't just pick up and move to a new location very easily. As you could see on the slide, acquisitions in this segment generate very strong returns of about 33% pre-tax. And so this is a great option in which to deploy the company's free cash flow into. Now, Bombshells is a fairly new segment for the company. It's a military-themed sports bar. They started building them about 7 years ago and have 10 locations today. There was a lot of experimentation in this segment. The company started with building them on cheap real estate with smaller formats. And the most recent units are actually on Class A locations with larger buildouts. And the more recent ones have been extremely successful. Unlike your typical restaurants, where it's mostly food sales, which are lower margin, Bombshells is mostly liquor sales. About two-thirds of the revenues come from liquor. And because of this, the margins in Bombshells and the payback from Bombshells units are very attractive. RCI thinks that it can build 80 to 100 of these over time compared to 10 currently. So it's many multiples of its current size. And as you can see below, the economics here are great as well. And so the economics here are sufficient to support potential franchisees. And so there has been interest by franchisees to franchise this concept. And as I mentioned earlier, the company announced its first franchisee last year with an agreement to build three units in the coming years. So here's some quick napkin math. If RCI builds out all 80 to 100 units of Bombshells themselves, which I think they could do with internally generated free cash flow, meaning they would not have to issue equity in order to build out these themselves, and I think they could do that, these would contribute an incremental $8 to $10 of free cash flow per share over time, compared to about $4 today. So if they just took their cash and reinvested it in Bombshells only without doing club M&A and got to 80 to 100 units, then I think today's $4 would go to 12 or 14 basically per share over, you know, a 5 year, call it a 5 year period that it takes them to build these out. I think they could fund them over 5 years. I don't know that they will, but I definitely think it's doable. And if they franchise the units, that would accelerate the build out. It would provide a higher multiple royalty stream that not only generates incremental earnings and cash without putting up a lot of capital, but can also be borrowed against in order to pursue additional M&A or open new corporate owned locations as well. So here is my model. I assume that the company reinvests part of its free cash flow into club acquisitions as well as new Bombshells units, and that the pre-tax return on those units are about 35%, which I believe is conservative, as you can see in the math from previous slides. That doesn't have, you know, the model doesn't have the company reinvesting all of its cash into growth, since I assume they will be very selective on projects and acquisitions that they choose to pursue. And then I assume that the company holds leverage constant around in the mid twos, and they use any excess cash to buy back shares at 15 times free cash flow, which is higher than where the shares currently trade. If the multiple stays at the current depressed levels, the company should be able to buy back even more shares than I show in my model, and thereby it would grow its free cash flow per share even more rapidly than I'm modeling. The model here also does not assume any upside from franchise units. I'm only assuming corporate owned units and club M&A. And lastly, I'm giving the company no credit in the model for what I expect to be an absolutely bonkers late 2021 and 2022 as occupancy restrictions at the company's locations are lifted and people are less fearful of going out and socializing. I think there's a ton of pent up demand here. I think the next year and a half are going to be very, very strong for this company. And yeah, putting it all together, I think RCI can grow its free cash flow per share conservatively to $9 by 2024, which would make the stock worth $138 or so, which would be up about 4x from current levels. And so that this is why I'm excited to share this idea with you guys today. And yeah, I'm ready for any questions if you have any.
Yaron, thank you so much for sharing this idea. I've been aware of it for some time, but I don't think we've had an in-depth presentation yet. And you raise a lot of great points there in terms of value creation. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on the capital allocation side, and how does management decide whether to buy back stock or reinvest in the business?
I think it's really dependent on the opportunities they have in front of them. So when the stock price is very low relative to the maintenance free cash flow yield, I think they are more inclined to buy back stock and not take on any risk of additional M&A or additional development of new Bombshells units. As the stock, as the valuation of the stock increases and the free cash flow yield of the stock goes down, I think they're more inclined to pursue M&A and new Bombshells units. But the important thing to highlight is that I think they've proven that they're in no rush to do anything if there's nothing to do. If the stock price is very high and there's no good M&A opportunities and there's no good Bombshells locations, they're perfectly content letting the cash build up until there's something smart to do. And now, fortunately for us as shareholders, there's a lot of great things for them to do right now. You know, the stock trades at a double-digit free cash flow yield, but even though it trades at a double-digit free cash flow yield, I still would have no problem at all if they deployed all their cash into M&A and new Bombshells units, because the returns on those are well above double digits, right? The free cash flow yield on the stock now is maybe 11%. The returns they get on new Bombshells units and club M&A are well in excess of the 11%. And so I would say they should do as much of that as they can reasonably and intelligently do without getting ahead of themselves. And whatever is left over, they could use to buy back stock. So that's what I expect them to do.
How much of the stock does management and the board own roughly?
So Eric, who's the CEO, owns about 8% of the company, and that's the majority of the insider ownership of about 8%. And Eric might own 7 or maybe 8%, but the board in total owns about 8. So most of that is Eric. He's like the third or fourth largest shareholder, and that's most of his net worth.
And do you find the executive compensation all okay? No red flags there?
Yeah, so they're very stingy with equity, which I like. They really highly value their equity. They'd rather pay people in cash, so there's no stock comp. And for the most part, I would say it's reasonable. You know, like for a $300 or $400 million company, I've seen some executives making multiples of millions of dollars at some companies like that, where they don't have skin in the game and the stock has done nothing for a very long period of time. And you know, you could also make the argument that I forget exactly how much Eric makes. I think it might be $1 million a year, and maybe the CFO makes, you know, half or three quarters of that. So it's not an insignificant sum, but it's also not, I don't think it's egregious by any means. And I like the fact that it's all in cash, and they feel like they don't want to issue shares to dilute themselves. So overall, I would say it's better than average.
Are there any regulatory risks here or concerns at all?
Yeah, look, I think one of the pushbacks I get from people is the gentlemen's clubs. You know, some people have social or moral issues with it. And so that's one of the pushbacks I get. My pushback to that pushback is, this is a good job for a lot of the people who work at these clubs. I think if you took the optionality that they had to work there away from them, I think most people who work at these clubs would be upset by that. You know, they get to pick their hours, they get to pick their schedule, they make decent compensation. And I think that flexibility allows them to be at home potentially when their kids need to be home and be able to take classes. If they want to get a part-time degree somewhere, they have that flexibility. And so I personally think no one's forcing anyone to work at these locations. And I don't have a moral obligation with people who want to work there or people who want to go there to be customers. But to the extent, you know, there is some kind of government perception that this is not okay and it can get regulated more. I haven't heard anything specific, but that I guess that would be the regulatory scare that I would have. But I think it's more of an overhang on the valuation of the stock than actually a regulatory risk for the business.
For someone who would like to track this idea over time, what would be the key data points to keep an eye on?
So the company does a very good job of disclosing its same store sales within like a week after the end of every quarter. So that's a big one. Obviously, earnings releases as well. The company presents at a few conferences a year, and also puts out press releases whenever it signs a new, you know, franchise agreement or whenever it's looking to open a new Bombshells location or whenever it's doing M&A. So I would say any press releases on the capital allocation front, whether it's new club acquisitions, new Bombshells locations, or new franchisees, and then anything on the revenue or earnings front, which would be the end of quarter same store sales releases, as well as the earnings releases and earnings calls. Those are the main data points.
Great. Well, Yaron, I will leave it there. I would just encourage our members to follow up with you directly with any thoughts or questions, and we're happy to facilitate an introduction if it's desired. Maybe you can just share the best way to reach you. I know you're also on Twitter as well.
Yeah. So my Twitter handle is One Main Capital. It's the number one and then the word Main Capital spelled out. And all my contact information is available on my Twitter handle as well. It's the email is yaron@onemaincapital.com and my website is www.onemaincapital.com. So, I'm available to answer questions and look forward to hearing feedback.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being with us and sharing your investment thesis.
Thank you.
Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.